So we're here with Max Marsh Pickard here with Paddle Art, a relatively new facility in Dubai. And today we're going to discuss Paddle in Dubai. We're going to discuss the paddle as a club and the setup for a club. Also, you're going to have pickleball here, so paddle and pickleball. And then we're going to finish with the community questions and discuss some of those questions.
Thanks for having me, Sandy. It's exciting to have you here in Dubai for the week, coaching our coaches and helping us develop the great sport of paddle in Dubai.
I mean, it's amazing. Obviously, I spent a lot of time here, you know, 10 years. And when I started, it wasn't growing to this stage. I feel like I've been away for, you know, less than a year and a half, and it's kind of really exploded. And one of those is this club, and this has been open now really a week or two. Tell us a little bit about your story and how Paddle Art came to be, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think you left just before it absolutely exploded in the UAE. I think at that time, we're looking at maybe 4 or 5 clubs.
Yeah.
Currently, we're looking at over 400 courts, private and commercial, in the UAE. So it's changed a lot within the course of those 2 years.
Yeah.
Myself, like most, like yourself, coming from a tennis background, started playing tennis at the age of 4, had a relatively good junior career, moved into coaching tennis from the age of 16, and more recently in the past 5 years put my focus entirely into paddle, seeing that it was a fun sport to be involved in, and also picking up the balls is much easier in paddle than it is in a tennis court.
Definitely. And you've played it for a few years now as well, though, haven't you? Which is good. I feel like there's a lot of people that are building clubs without really having played much, but I remember you entering, I think your first tournament was at NAS actually, which I was organizing. So
it was, I didn't do very well, unfortunately.
No. We won't talk about that. Yeah. No, but yeah. It was, I mean, it's good. You kind of played it for a while, enjoyed it, got yourself a little bit into the coaching side, and then thought, right, let's set up a club.
Absolutely. Now my focus is more in business development, in management. I was doing consulting in Saudi Arabia, helping open clubs. Obviously, having a tennis background, it helps in some form of infrastructure, but it is a completely different sport. At the end of the day, there's a lot of new things, and it's constantly evolving. The environment's evolving, the competition is evolving, and also people's expectations are changing a lot as well.
I mean, talk about evolving, and we said there, you know, almost what, 400 or 500 courts now in the UAE. You've just opened a new club. How are you feeling about that? Because obviously 2 years ago it would be a completely different scenario. How are you feeling about opening that club now, and really, I guess, what are you going to focus on to differentiate yourself from all of those other clubs that are now around?
Yeah, I mean, the conversation in the paddle world in Dubai at the moment is it too late to open a paddle club? Is it a good time to open a paddle club? And I believe that yes, it is, if you do things the right way. We now have a really good customer base in paddle. I believe there's 10,000 to 15,000 players playing the sport within Dubai alone, and a lot of them are still beginners, so there's a lot that can be done. If you want to succeed right now with a new paddle club, you have to have a nice facility. People have different expectations in terms of the courts, the turf, the ceiling height, all of these different things. But most importantly, it's building the community and creating retention.
And it's interesting because it's almost a smaller version of what's happened with Sweden over the last few years, in that it's exploded, and really the last year and a half it's just court rentals and everyone's just renting out their courts, and there hasn't been a lot of thought, I don't think, around coach education or setting up programs, junior academies, things like that. And so, you know, and obviously that's why we're here this week, is to work with the coaches and to help set those up. How important do you think, well, coach education is, but also setting up those programs for the retention in the club?
I believe it's key to success. I mean, like you said, you look at 2 years ago when paddle started to grow, you could put two courts anywhere and they would be fully booked, you would make your money back and not have to worry. Now, as we mentioned, you are becoming in an environment that's a lot more competitive, so you need to give the players a reason to stay. And how you do that is by giving them a place where they can train, where they can learn, they can meet other people. There's a lot of money that's lost for people who can't find other people to play with. Their first friends they started playing with, they don't play anymore, or maybe they got worse, they got better. So you need to constantly create an environment where people can meet new players and continue to grow and progress. We always look at Sweden. For me, that's like looking into the future. I think Sweden, the timing was a little bit earlier. Their boom was during COVID. So once the borders opened up again, people were traveling more, they weren't working from home. obviously it dropped. We were a little bit after that. So I think we can avoid making the same mistakes that have been made by putting that focus into training, growing our communities, and creating a place where people do want to come back and not just rent a court.
Yeah, and I think Dubai is quite a unique population in that it's very transient, right? So, you know, there's lots of people coming and going. The same coaches now are not the same as they were a year or two ago. And that community element of having, you know, the right structures in place is so important, I think, here. You're constantly getting new people in the game. You're having tourists that are coming over that are wanting to play. You'll have paddle holidays. You'll have loads of elements that maybe Stockholm or Sweden, as an example, is a little bit different. So it's being prepared for that and structuring the training around the coaches that you have. And you know, we've worked with the team this week. It's a great little group of coaches, and I feel like having that structure, they will then go on and thrive in that environment.
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, like you said, it's a very transient place in Dubai. Most people who come here, they aim to stay 3 years, let's say. So if you don't make an effort to constantly bring in new people, in 3 years' time, you've lost your players, right? You've got nobody left. Mm. So you need to constantly be doing new things, constantly getting new players and new people involved. So it's always a fresh environment that you can build. Mm. And unless you're like me and you get stuck here and you end up 10 years in the same country, after 3 years, these people are moving on. But you also have a lot of people arriving, so you need to include those people and always keep looking out and not just in at your club.
I feel like it's good in a way because it stops you from getting too comfortable. You're always having to do those, you know, taster sessions and introduce people to the game, which I think in the long term is a really good thing. Now, obviously, you've only been open a couple of weeks less, and so, you know, we'll see how those programs will go. But what advice would you give to someone in this whole process of, you know, and we've been speaking, you know, the last few months about this, of, you know, the construction and getting the courts set up and operated. And I think you were planning to open a bit earlier, but what advice would you give to people that are thinking about setting up a club or are in that phase at the moment?
First and foremost, if it's in this part of the world, add 6 months to your initial opening date.
I think that's probably every part of the world, yeah.
That is pretty much everywhere. But second of all, we covered the topic of the basics, right? The courts, it's important. The ceiling, that's important. But no matter how beautiful your courts are, if you don't have the right people, and the right people who aren't properly trained, you won't be able to get people into your club. You won't be able to have retention with your classes. You won't be able to have a good reception team that will be able to put people towards your group classes, that will be able to create events and help you on a day-to-day basis. Now the focus has gone from what was before, I would say, physical. Just having a court was enough. Now it's the softer skills that matter. The right people in the right place and in the right roles.
So how would you go about finding those people? I mean, you were in the paddle community already, so you knew your coaches, but if you were advising someone else, how would you go about almost starting that process of recruiting your coaches or your reception staff?
Yeah, I would say a common mistake that we see is people will just throw money at coaches, let's say bring in someone who's an extremely good player, but isn't necessarily educated as a coach. Having a great player does not make a great coach, and it has been proven and it's been discussed many, many times. I don't just say that because I'm not the best player. I wouldn't say I'm the best coach either, but I've seen that through the amount of years I've been in sports management. So for a club owner who's starting now, if you're looking at hiring your team, I would suggest bring on a coach who, first of all, can speak the language of the country that you're in, very important, and is willing to learn and is passionate about the sport. Look at their soft skills, look at their personality, how they talk to people, how they engage. Are they willing to organize things for you that are maybe a little bit out of their scope just because they love the sport? That is way more important than their level of play.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there, really, when you're talking about willingness, like willing to learn, willing to kind of put themselves out there, and humility, right? Like, you know, as a coach, we are constantly learning, constantly evolving. And so it's being open to that. The more difficult ones for us, particularly in coach education, are very good players that feel like they know it, and therefore, you know, don't want to make the changes to become a better coach.
Yeah. But I think this isn't just paddle specific.
No.
If you look at big sports, you look at tennis, you look at football, the best players aren't the best coaches. You look at Jose Mourinho, literally zero in football. Mm. Alex Ferguson, not a great player. Patrick Mouratoglou in tennis, a lot of these great coaches have managed to put that focus on looking at other people rather than yourself. If you're really good at something, you're naturally talented. Mm. It doesn't make it necessarily easy for you to teach because you don't understand the challenges that person's been put through. You expect them to be able to achieve certain things that you could do, but not everyone has that natural ability that you have.
Yeah, and we have that example, Ciarelli, who, you know, has coached Bella for years, can barely play, and it's exactly like you said, it's focusing on them and not yourself. And once you can detract from that, I think, you know, immediately your coaching gets better, whether it's kids, groups, individuals, whatever. Yeah.
Mm. And I mean, this might be an unpopular opinion, but when you have very, very good players who were borderline professional or were professional to a certain extent, coaching is a step down for them. They feel like they failed their career in a way a little bit. And I've seen that especially in tennis. They've become coaches out of a lack of choice. When you take someone who was never involved in a professional environment but chose to become a coach because they love coaching and they want to teach, you have a completely different environment.
Mm, yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, speaking of unpopular choices, let's move towards pickleball. And I say that in jest because I know how popular pickleball is around the world. And as part of your facility here, you are also building 5 indoor pickleball courts just outside this building. What was your kind of reasoning for that and I suppose your introduction into the sport?
Pickleball, I mean, it's huge in the US. Anywhere else in the world, not so much. And I see it as a sport that is easily playable for players who play tennis or paddle. It's a racket sport like any other. You can also play singles, so you don't always have that struggle of finding 4 players, which makes it interesting. We decided to introduce it here because we like to be the first to do things. We like to be, you know, innovators. We want to do something a bit different. And we genuinely believe that in Dubai, people will enjoy the game of pickleball. It's easy to pick up. It's a lot less technical, a lot less physical. The racket's lighter, the ball's lighter. So for the people who maybe are getting a little bit older or struggling physically or just don't have the ability to play, for example, paddle, pickleball is a great option for them. And I do believe the two are complementary as well.
I think so. And it's popular for the same reasons. Like you said, it's easy to play, it's sociable. You can have fun immediately stepping on the court. And I think part of the reason it's grown so much in the US is that it's pretty easy and cheap to set up. You know, you draw the lines on the court, you put a net up and well, you need the rackets and ball, but away you go. You know, it's the paddle is obviously a bigger, more of an investment. But I think it is a little bit like that in that those that struggle physically with paddle will really enjoy pickleball. And I think we'll see more and more people playing that. It's just the recognition. And here, I think, again, is a great environment for that. The Emirati and the Arabic culture in general is social, isn't it? It's, you know, let's have a coffee and as a group and let's play a sport as a group. Yeah. And I think pickleball will be a huge success.
I mean, on 2 points of that, from a business side, it's much cheaper to open a pickleball facility because you can fit 4 pickleball courts on a tennis court and you don't have to build anything. You, like you said, you could literally draw lines and put nets. Paddle, there is infrastructure, you need height, you need certain different things. So in terms of cost, when you look at a country like Dubai, there's a lot of paddle courts, why not bring in a new sport, right? And the second thing that I wanted to mention about pickleball is, there were 2 points.
2 points.
First
the second
point,
one was the more important.
The second one was way more important, actually. I'll get back to it if it comes back to me.
Yeah, that's fine. But it's one of those that, like you said, it is complementary. So I think you're going to have lots of players playing paddle and really enjoying the group lessons, the sessions here, the king of the court, all the stuff that you would do with a paddle club. What would you do for the pickleball? Would it be similar? It would mainly be court rentals. You'll do some lessons. You'll do some kind of training sessions, or is it purely kind of social court rentals and tournaments?
So I would like to do things differently than how paddle came in here. So I would like to start with community. Mm. Pickleball, no one takes it seriously unless you look at what's happening with LeBron James in the US buying teams and all of this. Currently, it's not a recognized sport. I genuinely believe people will play any sport if there's an infrastructure around it. If I can go meet some people, have some fun, get some exercise, burn some calories, doesn't matter what sport it is. The second point I wanted to say about pickleball, as you mentioned, unpopular opinion, and I'm sure you remember once paddle was introduced here, people were saying, I will never play paddle, what's this sport, mini rackets, you know, it's not a real sport, I'll only play tennis. Now I see the same thing with pickleball people who play paddle think that paddle now is cool because it's become more mainstream, and they're saying pickleball, I won't play that, small racket, small net, all of this. So I do believe the mindset will change, and once people try the sport, it's extremely fun and addictive to play. So the focus on community will definitely be there from our side, getting people involved. Obviously, when you bring a new sport to a country, you need to invest a lot of time and energy into introducing that and getting people on the courts. And if anyone's listening to this and is a pickleball coach and is looking for employment, we are currently looking. So,
okay, nice. Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. And as you were describing pickleball there, I was thinking of our first year with paddle in this country. And I remember there just almost starting with the federation. We were going to really big kind of, you know, investors or big, you know, like Dubai Golf and clubs, and they didn't know what paddle was. And now everyone knows what paddle is in the UAE. And we have that problem in the UK now a little bit, where we go to, you know, somewhere and you have to describe the sport and they think that it's paddle boarding and you go through that whole conversation. But I think both pickleball and paddle will really benefit from this community. I mean, this is key now. And especially with social media and the way that that's growing, I think, you know, if you can do a good job of community with pickleball and paddle at this location, you probably find that the two communities will merge.
100%, and that's what we want. I mean, people don't have to focus on one sport. If you play one sport, a racket sport, usually those skills are transferable and you can enjoy another sport. Mm. Unless you're competing at an extremely high level, maybe people won't mix them, but at a club level, why not enjoy all the sports that are available?
Yeah, I agree. Now, we have a little thing in the podcast, and I'm putting you on the spot here because I didn't tell you about it before, but is overrated, underrated. So we're going to give, you know, an example, and we're going to talk about setting up a club. So when you're setting up a club, because this is the process you've just been through or kind of going through, what do you think is overrated about setting up a club?
You have put me on the spot. Overrated, I would say the structure. At the end of the day, it's steel and glass.
Mm. And the actual court, you mean?
Yeah, the actual physical court. Turf, yeah. Very important. But overrated is the structure. You'll have people import the structure from the other side of the world just because it has its name on it, even though it's probably come from the country of origin where you are. For example, I was working in Saudi Arabia. We were importing glass from Spain, but that glass was made in Saudi, shipped to Spain, and shipped back again.
Yeah.
So yeah. The structure itself, in my opinion, is overrated.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's so many people that are building courts, and, you know, now I know China, there's actually some quite good models that are being made in China, and, you know, at the beginning, it's a bit of a monopoly for these five or six companies, manufacturers that are building these courts. And I would agree, I think turf and the groundworks, like the foundation, is really important, because, you know, if people take a shortcut on that, the courts don't last as long, and the bounce isn't as true. But, you know, the actual physical structure, I would agree with that. What do you think is underrated?
The team. They are the front facing, especially the reception team. People tend to just hire anyone and think, oh, you've worked in a reception in an office, you can do it in a sports club. It is not the same thing. They need to understand the sport. They need to understand the products. They need to understand the equipment that you're selling, because they are also doing sales for you.
Mm.
They're selling your coaching. They're selling your equipment. They're selling balls. And they're selling your club. They're selling your brand.
Mm.
So the emphasis on having good people in your front desk should not be overlooked.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's this mentality of build and they will come. And in paddle, in that journey, and Sweden's been through it, UAE has been through it, UK is at the start of this now, where it gains popularity, and then they're like, right, let's just build a whole load of courts and clubs, and we won't care about the staff or the little soft skills or the way of, you know, setting up the small details. But if we build the courts, it's popular enough now that the courts will fill on court rentals. But when you reach a saturation point, like the UAE and like Sweden, and these countries will reach it, it's these little skills, like these soft skills and the staff, they're crucial. They're what make the difference, really, aren't they?
100%.
Mm. So we're going to finish this podcast with just a quick question. Normally this comes from our community, and I read it before we started. It's the question that we have is that they want to get into lessons, and they are asking whether it is better to go into a group lesson or whether they should start with individual lessons, whether they should just have a one-on-one with a coach, or are they better going to the club and jumping in a group lesson?
I think that depends where you start off. If you have zero racket experience, you've never touched a racket of any kind in your life, I would suggest start maybe with one or two individual lessons, because the focus will be more on your technique. But as soon as you can, join a group. It's a social sport. You need other people to play with, right? If you're just starting, you probably don't know anyone as well. Mm. So you're going to practice more gameplay, which is going to be more enjoyable for you. And you're going to meet other people for you to play with. And then you can organize matches together. And then your community will grow. And you'll enjoy the sport a lot more than just running up and down the court by yourself all the time, one against one with a coach.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think here, UAE for sure, but in a lot of countries that players are used to having one-to-ones, and it's easier for the coach, and the player likes the attention. But it's, I would say that you would probably want the majority of your lessons to be group, and only the occasional individual if you wanted to really focus on something technical. So if I was going to put a percentage on it, I would probably say, you know, 80 or 85% of your lessons should be group. I mean, I'm just going out on a limb here. That's based on no research whatsoever. But, you know, that would be my thought process.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in group lessons, obviously there's more of you. You're going to be more in a gameplay situation. The focus on technique may be a little bit less. So if you're in your group lessons and you see, okay, I'm feeling my forehand is a little bit weak, I need some more focus on that, then yeah, take an individual lesson or two, build up that skill and continue your group lessons, because that's where you're going to learn the most.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Max, thank you very much. Absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Sandy.
Yeah.